The gathering at Galaxy House was notably brightened by the arrival of Azalin, all cheer and light. She skipped into the living room, her hands behind her back, squared herself in front of Mickey's armchair, and leaned down to grin into his face, saying, "I've got something you're really gonna like." Sionji coughed and excused himself to the kitchen before he cracked up laughing in front of everyone. What? Asked Mickey, looking a little nervous. Azalin leaned closer still, her nose paralleling his, and batted her eyes so that her long, thick lashes actually brushed his cheeks. He drew back a little into the armchair's cushion, his face crimsoning. And then Azalin reared back, took her hands out from behind her back, and held out the item she and Amanda had liberated from Liza a few moments before. "My notebook," Mickey declared, taking it from her hands and looking through it to make a quick inventory of its pages. "It's all here. Everything I don't already have." He closed it and looked up at her. "Where did you find it?" "Oh, I ran into Liza up on campus," said Azalin airily. "Figured I'd save her the embarrassment of coming down to fork it over in person. No sense rubbing it in, after all." Mickey beamed, enfolding the notebook in his arms. "Thank you. Not just you, all of you. Miss Jury, everyone." There was a chorus of graceful don't mention it's. Not long after that, the gathering broke up. The Galaxy House contingent went to bed, and the rest dispersed, walking up the hill and scattering to their various rooms. Mia asked if she could speak to Kate more privately. Kate said sure if she didn't mind coming up to Morgan 412. Corwin parted from his Aunt Belle in the Wedge. She told him to have a good time and be careful driving home, then went into the ladies' room, while the others went upstairs. So they sat in 412, Kate in her desk chair, Utna on her bed, Mia in one of the armchairs, and Corwin in the other with Nall on his shoulder. Mia didn't quite seem to know what to make of Corwin. She kept giving him these odd, speculative looks that were making him a bit uncomfortable. Nall, on the other hand, seemed quite charmed by her, and presently jumped ship to get some ear action from her as she and Kate talked. It took her a while to get to the point, probably because she was feeling out her comfort level with Corwin and Utna looking on. Utna acted as a sort of interpreter for Kate, which she often did when her roommate was dealing with someone unfamiliar enough to worsen her stutter. Corwin just sat and listened, making no comments. He looked like he was starting to fade a bit, but was unwilling to end his day just yet. "This morning," said Mia, "I received a rather odd email from the school computer system." She removed a piece of paper from her sweater pocket, unfolded it, and handed it across to Kate. It was a copy of the message Azalin had received from Durandal. Kate had one, too. Indeed, everyone named in the list had been sent a copy. But as the duelists had been rather busy today, only Azalin had actually read hers yet. Kate had received her report on it during the day's searching with interest, but not much attention to spare.
"Interesting,"
said Kate. She glanced up at Mia.
"You seem to be the odd one... out."
Mia nodded. "I noticed that too," she said. "Any idea why that might be?" Corwin wondered.
"I have a theory, but..."
Mia shrugged.
"I don't know you well, but I have the impression I can trust you, and there's no one else around here I get that feeling about. I think I'm on the list for the same reason you are, Caitlin. My father is one of the Elder Wedge defenders."
Kate blinked.
"Which one?
She asked. "John Trussell," said Mia.
"No kidding," said Corwin. "I didn't know Truss had a kid."
"It's not exactly widely known," Mia told him. "My mother was Minbari."
"Isn't that impossible?"
asked Kate. Apparently not, said Mia. But it was supposed to be. She drew aside some of her thick, lacquer black hair to show the bony crest she normally kept hidden under it, wrapping around the back of her head. Now that they'd been shown it, Kate, Utrina, Corwin, and Nall could see where it started, little ridges on either side of her forehead, just where the temples began. So, said Utrina, who recovered fastest, you think you and Kate are on the list because of your parents, and the rest of us are listed because we hang around with Kate. That's right, said Mia. You break up pretty evenly into two groups, with some overlap. Her inner circle from the band, and the Duelist Society. The chief exception is our Dorothy. Who's listed as Kate's responsibility here on Earth? Corwin finished for her. At her glance, he explained, She actually belongs to me, but I go to school in New Avalon. Oh, said Mia. Forgive me, I'm not very familiar with robots and the laws that govern them. Kate mused. We've got somebody. She sighed and gestured to Utrina. We've got somebody checking out the system itself, Utrina told Mia. See if the message was fake, and if not, what's going on in there? It's a pretty weird message to have come from Durandal. Mia nodded. I'd thought of that, and my computer skills aren't really up to checking it out. At any rate, I'm here because, as Caitlin says, I'm the odd one out, and I feel... She paused, weighing it. A bit exposed, she finally settled on. Since the bulk of their watch list seems to be your Duelist Society, she went on with a smile, I thought perhaps I'd see if I could join. Sort of a defense by consolidation, said Nall with a little feline grin. I like it. Not that I want to seem too stuck on rules, said Utrina with a wry smile, but do you have any fighting experience? Mia nodded. I think you'll find my skills adequate, she said. Obviously, I don't think it'd be a good idea to test them here and now, but I'd be more than happy to audition tomorrow. Kate looked curious. What do you use? Mia stood up, still smiling, and reached into the inside pocket of her uniform jacket. Her hand emerged holding a silvery cylinder of metal about 6 inches long by an inch or two thick. With a bright, metallic noise, this device suddenly sprang forth to become a metal staff 6 feet long. Corwin bounced to his feet as if sprung. Wow, he declared. I've heard of those before, but never seen one. That's cool. A traditional Minbari weapon, said Mia modestly, retracting the pike and putting it away. I don't mean to brag, but I think I'm good enough with it to satisfy your membership requirements. Kate smiled and nodded to Utrina, who said, Well, it won't hurt anything to try and find out. Mia took her leave shortly thereafter, with a date to meet with the Duelist Society for a tryout the next afternoon at Alden Hall. The four remaining sat around talking for a bit more, until Corwin couldn't control his yawning anymore and got up, gathering Nall onto his shoulder in the process. Okay, he said. I'm crashing out. See you guys tomorrow. Corwin, said Utrina as Corwin left the room, but he didn't hear her. Nearly asleep on his feet, he'd stayed a little too long, but how he hated to leave. He crossed the hall and pushed the still-broken door of Morgan 413 open, expecting to see only the bare room and Dorothy reading. He did see the bare room and Dorothy reading. He also saw, just for a split second, Juri Arisugawa, standing next to one of the beds, her uniform jacket in her hand. A moment later, that jacket was neatly wrapped around his head, having been thrown quite deftly but without rancor across the room. Sorry, he said with considerable aplomb for a blundering idiot with a jacket wrapped around his head. Forgot you were staying here. Never knew, actually. 1,000 apologies. Please don't hit.
I won't, said Jury with a tone of barely concealed amusement. Just go.
Good night, Corwin, said Dorothy helpfully.
Good night, Dorothy, Corwin replied. He turned around, unwrapped the jacket, tossed it back over his shoulder, apologized once more, and went back into the hall with rather grave dignity, closing the door behind him without looking.
Okay, he said. That didn't work. Plan B.
The door of 412 opened before he could knock, and Utina looked out at him with considerable amusement.
Oops, she said.
Yeah, Corwin replied. Where can I crash?
Well, Devlin's got a single, but now it's in Stoddard. There's barely room for him in there. They're all asleep down at Galaxy House, unless Jacron got home and didn't crash right away. Kind of a gamble to take in this weather.
Sionji, said Kate. Utina snapped her fingers. Sure, Sionji. He's in Institute 301. You know where Institute is?
Down the hill across from Founders?
Right.
Okay.
Nall eyed the still-falling snow outside the window, mentally gauged the distance down the hill, and decided the hell with that.
Good night, said Corwin.
Good night, said Utina, with Kate calling her own good night from behind her.
Corwin turned and trudged away. He barely stayed on his feet as he schlepped down the hill to Institute Hall. Then he fumbled for a while with his electrolock confounder before managing the simple rascal job and gaining access to the stairway, then the third floor, before knocking wearily on the door to 301. After a moment, that door opened, revealing Kyoichi Sionji's long, slightly puzzled face above the most garish bathrobe Corwin thought he'd ever seen, and he was Caitlin's brother.
Hi, said Corwin. Look, I'm sorry to bother you. I know we haven't really been properly introduced or anything, but there's a redhead in my bed, and I need a place to crash. I'm Corwin, Kate's brother, and this is...
He turned his head to indicate the place on his shoulder where Nall should have been, only to discover that the dragon wasn't there. He blinked for a moment as the knowledge ground through the slow-turning gears of his brain, then muttered, "That little bastard."
Hey, Nall, Utina murmured as she punched up her pillow and curled up.
Yeah? Nall replied sleepily.
I thought dragons only slept on treasure.
Nall yawned.
We do, he replied.
A pause.
Aw, said Utina, and she kissed the dragon on top of his head.
That's so sweet. Good night, Nall.
Good night, Utina.
Here's hoping, Caitlin mused to herself as she burrowed down in her covers and listened to the wind whip snow against the windows. Things start making a little bit more sense tomorrow. In a room lit only by the greenish glow of two pairs of data goggles, Edward Tversky said in a low voice, "Oh, dear."
Airy Productions Unlimited presented Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword, Fourth Movement, Duelists of the Rose. The symphony will return with Roses in Springtime, but if you remember the original text release of the first symphony, you'll recall that there are quite a lot of smaller pieces to be done before we get there.
Hang on.